Don't give up the fight.
Don't give it up, don't give it up.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
Stand up for your right.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
To Africa Live, issues behind the headlines in Africa, with myself, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and our co-host, Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba, who's not with us quite yet, but we'll see him shortly, hopefully. We're going to be talking a bit more today about the world food crisis, which we were talking about on last week. We're going to continue that discussion, and we're going to answer some of your questions that that some of you sent in at the end of the show last week that we weren't able to get to. We're going to answer some of those questions at the beginning of the show in just a moment. So stay tuned here on thewhoradio.com.
International team. International team. International team.
ITT.
International team.
International team.
International team. International team. International team.
ITT.
International team.
International rook.
International team. International team. International team.
Walla 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 wal Look how you up there. Yeah. Now we up there. Say, yeah.
Well, not true, I won't talk again, you. Not true, I won't talk again, you. If I deny you, you could still punish me. You could fade punish me. You could do my punish me. You could land the punish me. You could do my punish me. I read down for bookie, you. I see some myself, you. Welly, welly, you. Well, 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 well. If I deny you, you could still punish me. You could fade punish me. You could do money punish me. You could land the punish me. I read down for bookie you. I see some myself you. Welly, welly you. Well, 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 well. Welly, welly you. Well, 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 well. Now true, I won't talk again you. If I deny you. Silly punish me, we could do money punish me, we could land the punish me, we could fade punish me. I read down for bookie you, I see some myself for you, I see some myself for you. Well, 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 you. Well, 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 well. Long time ago, long, long time ago. Land in Ashalanga,
long time ago.
For Ibo land in Unusi,
long time ago.
For Hausa land in Salunga,
long time ago.
For Galand in Tiafi,
long time ago.
For Ashanti land in Ayani,
long time ago.
For Ethiopia land in Sakarabet,
long time ago.
For Kikuyu land in Chocho,
long time ago.
For Bemba land in Chimbuzi,
long time ago.
Tonga land in Ijibunzi,
long time ago.
Long, 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 long time ago.
Long time ago.
Africa man we know they carry shit.
Long time ago.
We dey shit inside big, big hole.
Long time ago.
Long, 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 long time ago.
Long time ago.
Long, 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 long time ago.
Long time ago.
Before them come force us away as slaves.
Long time ago.
The time them come force us away as slaves.
Long time ago.
The European man na him they carry shit.
Long time ago.
Now for them culture to carry shit.
Long time ago.
During the time them come colonize us.
Long time ago.
Them come teach us to carry shit.
Long time ago.
Long, 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 long time ago.
Long time ago.
African man we know they carry shit.
Long time ago.
The European man teach us to carry shit.
Long time ago.
Many foreign companies they Africa carry all our money go.
Say I'm
say I. Many foreign companies they Africa carry all our money go.
Say I'm say
I. Them go write big English for newspaper Dabaru we Africans.
Say I'm say
I. Them go write big English for newspaper Dabaru we Africans.
Say I'm say
I. Read about one of them inside book like that them calling him na ITT.
Say I'm say I.
I read about one of them inside book like that, them calling him na ITT.
Say I'm, say I'm.
Them go, they cause confusion,
confusion.
Cause corruption,
corruption.
Cause oppression,
oppression.
Cause inflation. Them
inflation.
Go, they cause oppression,
oppression.
Cause confusion,
confusion.
Cause corruption,
corruption.
Cause inflation,
inflation.
Cause oppression,
oppression.
Cause confusion,
confusion.
Cause inflation,
inflation.
Cause oppression,
oppression.
Oppression, oppression, inflation, corruption, oppression, inflation. Them get one style way them they use. Them go pick one African man. A man with low mentality. Them go give you million naira breads. To become of high position here. Him go bribe some thousand naira bread. To become one UCLC chief. Like rat they do them go they do. From corner, corner, passy, passy, under, under, passy, passy, side, side, passy, passy, in.
passy, passy, outy, out. Passy, passy, pee, 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 passy, passy, in, in. Passy, passy, corner, corner, passy, passy, under, under. Passy, passy, side, this side. Passy, passy, up, up. Passy, passy, corner, corner, passy, passy, under, under. Passy, passy, side, this side. Then he gradually, 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 gradually. Then he gradually, 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 gradually. Them go be friend, friend to journalist, friend, friend to commissioner, friend, friend to permanent secretary, friend, friend to minister, friend, friend to head of state. Then start, start to steal money, start, start them corruption, start, start them inflation, start, start them oppression, start, start them confusion, start, start them oppression, start, start to steal money, start, start to steal money, like Obasanjo and Abiola.
International TV.
ITT
International TT
International Rook
International TT
International Thief
International TT
Go fight them well, well,
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 well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well, well, well, well, well,
well, well,
well, well, well, well,
well, well,
well, well, well,
well, well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well, well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well,
well, well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well, well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well,
well, well,
well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well, well,
this force, this class of petty bourgeois Africans. And when we're talking about the petty bourgeoisie, we're talking about the black middle class, you know, these forces. Malcolm X talked about them when he talked about the field Negro and the house Negro, and how the house Negro saw his interest align with the master's interest. And so when the field Negro tries to burn the house down, the house Negro works hardest to save the house, because he lives in the house, and because he, you know, wears the master's old clothes and things like that. And so you have this force, this body of folk, this class that's been created by our oppressors, who function as administrators. Now they function as a buffer between us and the white ruling class, and they administer the colonial system. Whereas before you had a direct white rule all over Africa and everywhere else in the world, you saw, in response to the African Revolution, white power begin to put in place these forces from the African petty bourgeoisie, this class that they created, putting them in power to function as a black face to carry on the same system. And so when you talk about in Barbados, we have the same justice system in our hands and treat our people the same way the whites treat Africans in America. What you're looking at is you're looking at the African petty bourgeoisie who is functioning as administrators for the same colonial system. And so they'll treat Africans the same way that white power treats us. In fact, oftentimes it's worse because they got something to prove, and not just that, not just the fact that they have something to prove to their masters to show them what side they're on, but also what happens is we end up living in worse misery, worse poverty, because not only are we now supporting the U.S. and Europe economically, but now we're also supporting this class of traitors, you know, who are able to send their children to schools in London and whatnot, are able to create a future for themselves at the expense of the future of the African masses. So when we're talking about power in our hands, justice in our own hands, we're talking about the African working class having control of state power. And that's what we can do in Barbados. What we can do is to have an organized capacity of the African workers, in alliance with the poor peasants, who takes state power for itself, and then we can begin to say we got justice in our own hands. Then we can begin to, put on trial those forces who oppress us, you know, who have oppressed us historically, and then we can create a just type of situation in the world. Brother Roosevelt also said that in Barbados they have the opportunity to create an African society, but he would say that we're afraid of the rest of the world. I think again what you're looking at is the African petty bourgeoisie. You're looking at the African petty bourgeoisie and the limitations of the African petty bourgeoisie, who could meet their own objectives at the expense of the objectives of the rest of us. Because the African working class, the masses of African people can't have a future without overturning the system that is set up, is a parasitic system that is set up to suck the blood of the African masses. The African working class can't have a future without getting rid of that type of system and putting another system in place where the African workers are in power. But the African petty bourgeoisie was able to meet their own objectives as a class, creating wealth for itself, being able to see a future for its own children, while the rest of us, the masses of African people, remain in abject poverty. Again, we're looking at the need for the African working class in alliance with the poor peasantry to come into power, not just in Barbados, not just in Africa, but everywhere in the world where African people are. We have to have a situation where the African working class takes power in its own hands, and not as unconnected entities as African Americans or Barbadians or Trinidadians or Nigerians or whatnot, but as one African people. That's the only way we're going to be able to create a future for ourselves, and in the final analysis, get justice for ourselves. So just wanted to answer those questions before we continue on. Again, we're going to be going into some discussion around the world food crisis, and we'll be having in the studio with us Comrade Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People Solidarity Committee, to discuss that with us. So stay tuned here on Africa Live on ahuradio.com. Again to Africa Live, Issues Behind the Headlines. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe. We don't have Comrade Chernoff and Bob with us today, but we're going to keep it moving anyway. We do have in the studio with us Comrade Penny Hess, who is the chairwoman of the African People Solidarity Committee, and we're going to be talking a bit about the world food crisis. So first of all, Comrade Penny Hess, it's good to have you here.
Uhuru Nivinga, it's an honor to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
First of all, before we get into the discussion on the food crisis, can you first of all let folks know what the African People's Solidarity Committee is?
Yes. The African People's Solidarity Committee, which I am a member of, was formed by the African People's Socialist Party in 1976. It's an organization for white people to work under the leadership of the African Revolution, under the direct leadership of the party. And we work in the white communities to build support and solidarity for the movement for African liberation by winning other white people to take a stand, to recognize that our interests are, if we want to see a future, be part of the future, are standing in solidarity with the right of African people everywhere to their own land and resources.
Right on. Now, there was an article recently published on uhurunews.com that you wrote that's entitled World Food Crisis and Starvation Made in America.
Yes.
Can you say why you say that this crisis was made in America?
Yes. I think it's really important to understand. First of all, any article or presentation or anything that I make is under the theory, the political theory and the understandings of Chairman Omali Yeshitela and the African People's Socialist Party called African Internationalism. It's an attempt to look at what's happening in the world through the eyes, the lens, I guess you could say, of the African working class. And I think that's really important to say, because we can read a lot about what is happening in the economy and everybody's opinion and this and that, but most people don't have a clue about why things are the way they are today. The only way that we can really find that truth is through African internationalism. And we have to begin with the premise that the chairman starts with, that capitalism itself as a system was built on the enslavement of African people, genocide against the indigenous people, and colonialism, and the theft of African labor, African resources, African culture, everything. That capitalism is a parasite, it's sucking the blood of African people and people on the planet Earth. And this is actually where, as the chairman says, the concept of the identity of white people, the concept of a nation for white people comes from. And so if we look at the economy in any other way, we will never come to the right answer. But the reality is that what is happening in the world today is not new. It's just simply what's been happening, what Europe has been doing for the last 500 years. It's getting a particular kind of coverage because the masses of African, Asian, and indigenous people and people in Latin America are angry. They're storming their government's palaces and the neocolonial, and they're putting pressure because, you know, they're angry. They can't eat. They're starving. So it's not new. It's just getting attention. And I just saw an article recently about a presentation that the U.S. CIA director just gave, saying how concerned they are that unrest is growing, especially in Africa and in Asia and throughout the world because of the situation. So the U.S. is concerned about it because its neocolonial governments are very vulnerable to this. So I think that it's really important, you know, for us to understand that. What's happening now is not new.
Yeah. In fact, I agree with that. I'm glad you point that out, because there's often a tendency to people have to think that these things just pop up out of nowhere.
Right.
Like, you know, the housing crisis just popped up out of nowhere. You know, and even you know, the imperialists try to explain it away like that, as if it has nothing to do with the parasitic relationship that it has with the rest of the world, and the deterioration of that parasitic relationship. You list you talk about a number of the causes specifically in that article to the world food crisis. And first of all, one of them you talk about is Wall Street speculation.
Yes, I think that's really important to look at. And I wanted to just go back to what I was saying a minute ago, because we have to understand, of course, that already in the world, half the world's population, about 3 billion people, live on $2 or $1 or less a day. So if you're feeding your family on 50 cents a day and food prices go up by 50% to 180%, then of course you're going to be starving. You know, I was just reading that in Sierra Leone, they're saying gas prices here in the United States could go up to $10 a gallon. In Sierra Leone, they're already $18 a gallon or liter. And people are making a dollar, you know, 30 cents a day. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, the oil prices completely affect the food prices. But that's, you know, so that's part of what we have to understand. It's not new. It's become a crisis. And it's a chronic crisis. It's not something that the UN or Bush's plan to raise $700 million or something for food is going to change in any possible way. But we're talking about the Wall Street situation. Anybody who's been following the Wall Street situation knows something about this. And certainly, I am not an expert, but you know, try to look at it and try to give it an analysis from the chairman's theory. In the past year, Wall Street and the U.S. economy has been in a huge crisis, and it still is. And one of the things that happened was, since about the year 2000, the Federal Reserve, which is not a U.S. government institution, it is a private for-profit bank, acts as the central bank of the United States and prints the money, has lowered interest rates consistently, enabling and deregulating that market, the mortgage market, with just, you know, causing enormous amounts of housing speculation, creating what's called a bubble, a housing bubble. And the housing bubble means that the prices of houses were inflated far beyond their actual worth. So the Wall Street, in particular, the Wall Street banks were targeting African community in particular, and Mexican community as well, for what's called subprime mortgages. And these were very risky, high-interest mortgages given to the African community, regardless of credit rating. They say it's because of low credit rating. That's not true at all, because many, many, many Africans, I think something like 75% of African families making way beyond $100,000 a year, were given subprime mortgages. But in any case, the subprime mortgages were risky because they start out low, and after a year or two, they go up, maybe even double, so that people don't have the ability to pay them. So Wall Street was taking these mortgages, repackaging them, so to speak, in what's called mortgage-backed securities, which are bonds. It's complicated. I don't totally understand it at all. But basically what it was like rolling up a bunch of mortgages, putting them into their investments in hedge funds. And these investments went all over the world. So about a year ago, the subprime mortgage industry collapsed because defaults on the mortgage payments had just skyrocketed because they had reset. So that imploded. The biggest subprime mortgage lender, American Home Mortgage, went out of business, and all around, you know, these bonds, these mortgage-backed securities that were in the hedge funds imploded, so to speak, and went bad in these investments all over the world, which had been reinvested and reinvested and reinvested. So I'm saying that, first of all, Wall Street made trillions of dollars on subprime, on the subprime, while the African community now pays the price. Wall Street was bailed out by the U.S. government to the tune of billions of dollars. So they still have their homes in the rich neighborhoods and in the Hamptons and Long Island and Manhattan penthouses. They still have that. They still have the, you know, the average salary on Wall Street is $387,000 a year. That's the starting salary. That's not what CEOs make or anything like that. So this is the issue. The subprime exploded. Africans all over the country are homeless, out of their houses. And the U.S. economy, even though the government and the Fed are pumping in all this money, the economy is in a very, very, very bad situation. What is happening is investors all over the world, and particularly inside the United States and in Wall Street, are now turning away from stocks, which is a share of a company, because that is too dangerous for them. They are switching to commodities. What are commodities? Commodities are real things for sale, like oil, like food, like rice. And so all of Wall Street and investors, bourgeois investors all around the world now are investing in rice, corn, oil, you know, food, pigs, hogs, cows, all of this kind of stuff. There used to be regulations on that, but a lot of those regulations were taken off, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But there were regulations that even a lot of neocolonial governments had to protect the cost of food as it affected the people. But the U.S. forced neocolonial governments to take those away. And so now speculation on food and agriculture and basic products that people need are fair game, open season, basically, for Wall Street investor. And from what I'm reading, speculation is responsible for up to 60% or more of the current rice and food and oil prices. And oil prices affect it because transportation in all of this is a very key thing. And of course, oil is used as fertilizer and all these other kinds of things. So this is a really key thing. There, from what I'm reading, there are no shortages. That is a false understanding that the U.S. media is putting out. There is hoarding and, you know, taking a lot of rice and stuff out of the market for sale because of the speculation and bubble. Then the agribusiness and that kind of thing are keeping it aside in big warehouses. That's why you can't get it at Costco and stuff like that right now. So, you know, they're doing that because they can make more money on it as the price goes up and up and up. It becomes a commodity for sale whose main purpose is for sale. And, you know, so this is one of the key reasons why this is happening. And it's, you know, again, it's driving the prices up. There's no reason why rice or even oil, which is now up to $120 a barrel practically. If you look at the world economic situation, it should not be that high. It is being driven up, just like the cost. It's a bubble. There's a rice bubble. There's a food bubble. There's an oil bubble.
Can you explain the concept of the bubble?
I mean, a bubble is when speculation drives up the cost of a commodity or anything, like the houses, beyond their actual value. And so that means that people then go, well, hey, I can jump into this market and make money by just investing in that. So you have people like Jim Rogers, the billionaire, the United States hedge fund investor. He's on CNN and CNBC and all these things all the time. And they're asking him, well, in this volatile and bad economy, what should people do? And he says, invest in agriculture. Invest in agriculture. He's telling people to do that. There's websites. You go on, I Googled food riots on the New York Times, internal to that paper online. And, it, you know, the articles come up, but with it, they have paid ads in it. And one of them was, invest in agriculture. And you click on that, and it's like, make a killing, you know, literally. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
There, I saw a website where a guy was writing, people are starving, there's food riots around the world, people only make a dollar a day. You know, I thought this was like a progressive thing. And he's saying, and the conditions can only get worse, and this is very desperate world situation. And then he goes, well, enough of the gloom and doom. I bet you're wondering, how can I make money on this? And I'm going to tell you. And he goes on to how you can invest in food prices, literally, at the expense of the people around the world. This is what's happening. And this is just parasitic capitalism. Mm-hmm. It's no different. I mean, we think about, you know, 150 years ago, there was an African bubble.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the cost, quote unquote, of African human beings being used as enslaved labor,
yes,
was also bet on, speculated on Wall Street, on the stock market. That's how the stock market started. The first stock market was in Holland, based on the Dutch East India Company, which was the trade in African people.
Yes.
You know, so it's not new. This is what capitalism does, and it's just because of the crisis of imperialism right now, it's raw, it's just totally out there. White people, because see, Wall Street is not just saving their own skins, although certainly they can, but it's a last ditch effort to save the U.S. economy, which is tanking. The dollar's down to the lowest it's ever been, oil is the highest it's ever been, and nobody wants the dollar anymore. I mean, the U.S. economy is on the verge of complete collapse. So this is a last-ditch effort. Where are they going to go after they've starved half the world? What
yes.
else is there? There's no vibrant new area of an economy that's built on parasitic sucking the blood of African people and people on planet Earth, and then you've killed and slaughtered and starved the majority of the Earth. Who else's blood are you going to suck?
Right.
Where is it going to come from? There is no place else to go.
Right. You're listening to Africa Live, Issues Behind the Headlines, with your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe. And we're talking with Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, about the world food crisis. We're going to go to a short break and come back to discuss this more. I want you all to be able to participate in this discussion out there. You can do so by calling in. You can call the U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599, and that's country code 001. Or you can call the U.K. number, which is 020-8133-6629, which is our U.K. number, and the country code there is 44. Or you can call us through Skype at our Skype ID, which is Uhuru Radio. All one word, all lowercase, UHURU radio, or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. So you can participate in this discussion. We'll be back after this brief break.
African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omali Yeshitela's new book, One Africa, One Nation, is available now. In this historic collection, the chairman and representatives of the emerging African Socialist International explain why Africa and all its resources must be liberated and in the hands of African workers and peasants in Africa and everywhere. The chairman's new book, One Africa, One Nation, documents the process of building the African Socialist International, which is rapidly growing in countries throughout Africa and in the U.S., the Caribbean, and elsewhere around the world. For pictures of the chairman's recent book signing tour, and to order your copy of One Africa, One Nation, go to burningspearuhuru.com. That's www.burningspearuhuru.com.
leader of Nigeria, giving crackers all the oil in our area. When you look at all the poverty in Africa, it's cause the scavengers eating the flesh, bleeding her to death. Now she trapped in a Shell gas station. They take vacations with our petrol. We living in the ghetto. They tell you not to get yours, just be satisfied to sell dope. I meet Kabila, the so-called president of Congo. Uncle Tom's like him is why we all poor. He letting thieves touch our motherland's contours. We deal with them like the white folks he follows. We getting robbed for more than a paycheck. If we was free, we wouldn't even have to pay rent. Be patient, how can I sit back and let my Africans die?
About it for a second, I'll get back at ya. Our motherland's in disaster. Our rubber gold and our oars in the hands of them bastards. They still want us hauling master. And if them niggas act up, calling forces for the backup. Our natural resources jacked up. I mean the deep in the pockets of a white man, right there. Now put them up, Uncle Sam, come and fight fair. Coming to a land should have been a crackers nightmare. But you're coming with your government and gunmen. All our resources turn into your funds and heavy kings can't get none. 36 in a day, rude boy, bring them big guns. Cause Africans gon' rise. No apologies in the end, comrades, let's ride.
Tells the truth. Africa is for all Africans. She belongs to you.
Welcome back to Africa Live, Issues Behind the Headlines, and I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we have in the studio with us Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And we've been talking about the world food crisis. I, again, want to invite you all to participate in this discussion. Phone numbers you can call in, the U.S. number you can call, 727-565-1599, or you can call the U.K. number, 020-8133-6629. You can call our Skype ID through Skype, which is Uhuru Radio, all one word, all lowercase, or email us at dj@uhururadio.com, and we'll read your comment on the air. Penny, you in the article that World Food Crisis and Starvation Made in America, you wrote that that biofuels are genocide. Can you talk a bit about the biofuel question and how that impacts on this food crisis?
Yes, I think this is very important, and this is something that I'm learning. I had never studied biofuels. I thought that was a good thing or something. I mean, you know, I didn't really ever think about it, but Actually, the more I read, the more I see. Fidel Castro has been waging a campaign for the last several years. He's the one that's really framed this question as saying biofuels are genocide and will be responsible for the starvation deaths of 3 billion people throughout the world, because it is taking land that needs to be, which is finite on the earth, that needs to be used for farmland and to grow crops, to grow fuel so that white people can run their cars. This is what he says. So their voracious cars can be fed. And even if a majority of the world's food land, farmland, was used for biofuels, it would still only supply some really small amount, like 15 or 20% of what Europeans and white people need to fuel their cars, at the expense of people around the world starving to death.
Yeah, I was looking at a video I don't remember which news network it was, but they were looking at the whole biofuel question and talking about how, you know, this amount, the amount that it would take to fill up a tank of gas would also feed a family for a year.
Yes, it is. Fidel makes that point very clearly, that it takes so much corn or soybeans or rice or whatever to make the ethanol that it's ridiculous. And it's, to me, first of all, it is the typical white world parasitic point of view that, oh, we're out of fossil fuels, we're out of oil, oh my gosh. You know, like the consciousness of white people sitting on the pedestal of the oppression of African people and people around the world and the theft of their resources is that we have somehow the right and the entitlement to unlimited resources in the world. And that somehow the world and the people on the planet are supposed to provide this. And so, you know, this is what Manifest Destiny was. This is what, you know, colonialism, the white going out to America, South Africa, settler colonialism was about. The opportunity, all we had to do was kill everybody else and oppress them and steal their resources, and we could have something for ourselves, which is exactly what happened. But, you know, the fact is that ethanol is no solution at all. And it's put forward as go green. This is the answer. When the answer is get rid of cars. You know, I mean, the answer is get rid of imperialism.
There you go. That's
And that the revolutionary movements, the liberation movements of African people, will get rid of the things that destroy the earth and things that destroy other human beings in order to make it you know, function. And I think that this is really key, because imperialism will never get rid of it. It will simply only find another parasitic way to try to solve a problem for the majority of people sitting on the pedestal of African people. And the whole question of the environment that you know, white people consider progressive to take on is really outrageous, because the question of the environment is, environmental destruction is a symptom of the U.S. and Europe's destruction of the civilizations and the populations of the majority of the people on the planet Earth. Mm-hmm. And of course it would destroy the environment. What is more key to the environment than human beings?
Right.
And so, you know, but this is never thought about. It's only thought about, well, how do we solve this problem for me? You know, and right. I think the chairman has really pointed that out over the years. There is no solution under imperialism. There is only the solution for the environment and the starvation of humanity and everything that imperialism is doing, by getting rid of imperialism, by the liberation of Africa, of the indigenous lands of Asia, into the hands of the African working class and colonized workers around the world. That's the only answer.
Yes. And you know, one of the things you say is that in the article is that farmers around the world can no longer afford to grow food, grain for food. Why is that?
Because there's an ethanol bubble, just like we were listening a few minutes ago to an interview with Jim Rogers, the billionaire trader, and she was saying, well, what about investing in corn? And he goes, for ethanol. And she, the interviewer, and he said, well, everybody else knows about that now. And this was a year ago, because that means that a farmer can make far more money growing corn for fuel, which is a different kind of corn, different uses. He's going to use it for that rather than for food. They can't make as much for that. So they've created a bubble, not only in agriculture, but in particular in the ethanol industry. So it's really clear. It's, again, manipulated by the stock market.
Yeah, it's clearly, you know, just a parasite. I mean, it's interesting how, you know, the parasitism is getting just bare, you know, getting clear. You know, you talk about earlier, you know, how, you know, on a newscast or whatever, they were talking about, you know, how, you know, the food riots were going on and all this stuff, and say, well, that's enough of the doom and gloom. Let me tell you how to make money off of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like parasitism is getting just bare bones, you know, and, it's interesting, because it seems to me that this is, something that's also, deepening the crisis, for imperialism. Even as it attempts to solve its own crisis, it just continues to deepen it even more.
Yes, I think it is, obviously, as the chairman says, really a deepening crisis of imperialism, and imperialism is beginning to feel, U.S. imperialism in particular, is beginning to feel the economic crisis as it never has before. It's experienced the political crises for many, many years. But I think that truly, in a certain way, I mean, it's raw, it's bare bones, but it always has been. It's just that the media, you know, because the world is smaller and there's the internet and we see what's actually going on. But think about when Africans and indigenous people and children were forced down into the silver and gold mines for 7 days a week until they died.
Yeah.
You know, up into water and mercury filled water with nothing to eat, never, you know, this happened. And when the Belgians were cutting off the hands of Africans and slaughtering millions of Africans in Congo, when the ivory trade was wiping out millions of Africans so that white people could have piano keys and billiard balls and all that kind of thing. I mean, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. This is what imperialism is. And it has benefited the white population totally. And what we see right now is an economic crisis where white people are feeling anxiety because why? Because maybe white people might have to experience some of the conditions that African people and colonized people experience. Mm-hmm. You know, is this what the anxiety is about? Yes, it is. So this is what it is.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think it's even getting to a point where it's difficult, because, like, we've seen in the past where white folks, you know, tend to be feign ignorance, you know, about, you know, the conditions of colonized folks that are caused by the parasitic relationship that we have to white power and white people. I think though that the things that we're seeing now are increasingly making it impossible to even, you know, feign ignorance, you know, about these conditions and whatnot.
Well, I mean, the white society works really hard to stay ignorant. Mm-hmm. The chairman calls it the ignorance of convenience.
Yes.
And it is hard. It's hard not to know, but white people are, you know, try to be involved in anything possible not to know. And if they do hear it, they rationalize something that says that it has nothing to do with them or with us. You know, people just feel like, well, that's sad that it's happening in Africa, that's happening someplace else, but it has nothing to do with me.
You're listening to Africa Live, Issues Behind the Headlines. We're talking with Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, about the world food crisis, and so feel free to participate in this discussion. Call in, email in, and put your two cents in. Penny, you also in the article you talked about the question of forced deregulation of world agricultural markets as another thing that is causing the food crisis. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. This is something, and this has been going on for the last 30 years in a particular kind of way, in which the U.S. is using the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, which supposedly gives loans to, quote, developing countries, to neocolonial countries, for economic development, which, of course, as we know, is a completely false, because all it does is indebt those countries, and it generally destroys their own indigenous economic infrastructure and makes them dependent in a deeper way on the world capitalist economy. So in the last 30 years in particular, the U.S. has been forcing farmers in colonized countries, neo-colonies, to basically get rid of their own farms. And the way they've been doing it, because you look at it 30 years ago, 25 years ago, Haiti produced its own rice. They had farmers, they exported their own rice. So did Zimbabwe, so did Malawi, mm-hmm. so did other countries, probably Sierra Leone and other places where there was a farming agricultural infrastructure that was the people's own, and that also grew the kind of rice that people like. In Thailand, people like a certain kind of rice. In Zimbabwe, people like a different kind of rice. They grew what the people liked, their mm-hmm. own cultural needs. But what the U.S. began doing with this thing was that terms for a loan from the IMF forced them to take U.S. rice, which was subsidized by the government. In other words, they paid the farmers like half of what the rice was worth, so then the farmers could sell it on the international market. U.S. farmers could sell it for less than the farmers in Haiti, say, could sell their rice. So basically, it put the indigenous farmers out of business. And this is happening right now in India. This process is going on. It's already happened, like I said, in Haiti and other places. But it's happening in India, and you see a huge rash of suicides of farmers in India. So this is the kind of thing that the U.S. forces. It destroys the infrastructure so that now it has to be completely rebuilt under the process of African liberation. Yeah, I mean, Haiti was forced into that loan in the 1980s, because that was when Papa Doc and Baby Doc had basically looted again. The neo-colonial thing had looted the treasury of Haiti after, of course, France and then the U.S. had impoverished Haiti and looted its treasury and forced Haiti to pay, quote, reparations to France for the loss of its property, quote unquote, of African people when it had its revolution. So Haiti's been hit constantly by imperialism, and that's why it's the poorest. They say that it is the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere, because it was doing fine. It had its first revolution. It was, you know, of African people, an African liberation revolution in the early 1800s, and it was doing great. But it was looted. It was forced by imperialism. So Haiti was in a position in the 1980s again to need a loan, and they went to, of course, the IMF was there, and mm-hmm. It gave them the loan, which of course indebted them and forced these terms on them that they would have to use U.S. rice.
And I was reading somewhere I was reading somewhere that that one of the reasons why they overthrew the government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide this last time that they did, not the first time, was because he was just beginning to disregard these deals. And also, of course, we know about the call for reparations from France for mm-hmm. the theft of for it forcing Haiti to pay for having freed itself from French slavery.
I understand, and I'm not, you know, totally, I'm not in any way an expert on the situation in Haiti, but from what I understand, of course, President Aristide, who was elected, of course, by the people and loved by the people in Haiti, was kidnapped twice, first in the early 90s by the United States government, and when he was brought back to Haiti, he was under the bonds of these IMF agreements. And from what I understand as well, that then, you know, after that, he began to disregard and struggle against the IMS constrictions that were on the people of Haiti. And then, of course, he was kidnapped again, and I think that was 2003 or 2004, and forced out of the country, and a vicious neocolonial governments that we see now, as well as UN death squads that are there in Haiti.
I want to, again, we are talking here on Africa Live, Issues Behind the Headlines, with Comrade Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And we're talking about the world food crisis. We're going to take a short break here and come back with more here on Africa Live on AhuruRadio.com.
Izokali rasha shawe madi etukulo re humane ka dintwa etukulo e re go potsa chimorenga etukulo e re go potsa bagale etukulo e re go potsa bagale bagale bo mokabe etukulo e re go potsa bagale bagale bo nkuruma etukulo e re go potsa bagale bagale bo nyerere etukulo e re go potsa bagale bagale ba Tanzania bagale ba kana e ke tukologo ya ma Afrika ahe ahe Afrika he izokali rashashawe ahe mama
tulama
tunasifela mama la
tulama mama tulama
ahe mama
tulama
yo tulama izokali basuka we
Kushambuhluku ya bana ba Afrika bale mafasing a ntle mafasing a bafaladi ba sorile ba faladi manju a shokishang manju a kushambuhluku manju bana ba borena bantjwa ma Afrika ahe Afrika ahe
izokali rashashawe ahe
Tulama,
izokali basuka we.
Tulama,
tulama,
tulama.
Redi le bana ba Afrika ga ile tshotse pushu lo fetsa we tshe fase khumo tshera ba redi le bana ba Afrika mi bushu ya bokoloni re tla e gona khumo tshera ba ro le ba redi ba Afrika le tlo re hlabela re tlo fenya re tlo tshwella
izo kali ra shasha we
maema
Uhuru, and welcome back to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Yabinga Zimbabwe, and we have in the studio with us Comrade Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And we've been talking about the world food crisis. Before we continue on, I want to let folks know that you can call in and participate in this discussion. You can call in at the U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599. You can call the UK number, which is 020-8133-6629, or you can call us through Skype. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, all one word, all lowercase, or email us at dj@uhururadio.com and participate in this discussion. We're talking about the world food crisis. Penny, in the article that you wrote entitled "World Food Crisis and Starvation Made in America," that has been published on AhuraNews.com, you list as one of the causes of the food crisis U.S. agribusiness. What is agribusiness?
Agribusiness is when agriculture becomes multinational corporations, or multinational corporations take over agriculture, or however it works. But it's they're multinational corporations like Monsanto, Archer Daniels Midland, Kraft is a big one, Cargill, Bunge I think is one. These are some of the world, most of them are US based corporations that control the majority of grain in the entire world. So they, while we say that, well, Africans and Afghanis and people around the world are starving because they can't get grain, but these corporations are making their highest profits ever. They're making so much money. They're raking it in hand over fist, and they're, like we're saying, they're hoarding grain. They're keeping it off the market because of this speculation. There is enough grain for people to eat around the world. If you see how, the media puts it out as well, all of a sudden China and India have a rising middle class and they want more meat and more food. Well, how did this happen? Like in the last few weeks?
Right.
That's ridiculous. I mean, that's absurd. This is happening because it's being manipulated by all of these forces that we're talking about as a last-ditch effort to save U.S. imperialism and parasitic capitalism. So we have Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, which is one of the profits increased more than 86%. Monsanto's were up 45%. And they're using the current crisis to impose their genetically modified seeds. Now, what they did was these companies, especially Monsanto, Archer Daniels Midland, invented, I guess, or use what they call genetically modified seeds. So therefore, they patent seeds. They have a patent on seeds. And that means that farmers around the world have to pay them to grow their seeds. I mean, historically, farmers would take their own crops going to seed and they would have their seeds for the next year. They would, or maybe plants would come up back up again, or, you know, however, but that is now illegal. And these agribusiness, these corporations send agents around all over the world to the farms to investigate, do they have any of the seeds? And of course, the genetically modified seeds, of course, blow in the air and come onto their mm-hmm. land, of course, and then they're forced to either shut down or pay for their seeds, pay for the right to farm, and they don't have those resources in countries like Sierra Leone and Haiti and that kind of thing. So it's more manipulation.
So you're saying that they've got these patents on the seeds, and because the wind may happen to blow a seed onto my property, mm-hmm. where I'm growing food of my own, if they find one of their seeds on my property, then they can charge me,
yes.
or make me begin to grow their seeds in which I have to be paying them for.
That's right.
That's just
that's
ridiculous.
Right. Well, that is what they're doing. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just another front of, like you're saying, the raw face of parasitic capitalism sucking the blood of people on planet Earth. It's, you know, here's, and you know, the other thing is that they put forward that their crops, genetically modified means that it's modified to supposedly have its own pesticides within it.
Mm.
In other words, that seed can grow up and kill any of the kinds of weeds or bugs or different things that would kill that plant. But two things about it. One is that, like in India and different places in the world, the people indigenously had their own pesticides, their natural pesticides.
Right.
Like in India, it's the neem tree, which they planted all around, and which is also good for, you know, people take it as an herb. It kills fungus, it kills bacteria. And our, you know, Monsanto in the U.S. and IMF forced Indian farmers to chop down all their neem trees as part of this, which then makes them completely dependent on the genetically modified plants or pesticides, Roundup and all that kind of stuff, which is very, very dangerous, goes into the water supply, and it poisons the people. But the other thing is that Monsanto and these companies were saying that their genetically modified wheat in particular would be immune to some of these wheat viruses that are going around the world killing, you know, causing famine, which probably a lot of it is caused by the U.S. and the CIA anyway.
Right.
But the reality is right now, almost all or a tremendous amount of wheat that is from genetically modified seeds is subject to, it's called the wheat virus, I think they call it the UGG virus, that is killing wheat crops all around the world, which they didn't factor into their GMO.
Huh.
So it's like another one that came out of nature. And it's killing them. And so the world wheat crisis is in a crisis because a huge famine caused by this virus is going on right now.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's just, it's like, it's so clear that when African and colonized people had control of their own land, then everything worked well. People, the society could eat. There was an indigenous infrastructure of an economy. The whole environment worked well. They had natural pesticides. There wasn't the problem of pollution and carbon emissions and ozone layer and whales dying when indigenous and African people controlled their own land. This is a product of imperialism.
Right.
And if we don't see that, it is exactly the same thing that is destroying the environment is creating starvation for the majority of the population on the planet Earth. It is, you cannot separate those things. And for white people to try to separate out the environmental crisis as if human beings, the conditions of human beings, were not part of that, is the ultimate of opportunism, white, self-centered, you know, it's just seeing ourselves as the center of the world, which has created this problem. It's like what the U.S. is trying to do right now by keep lowering the interest rates to save the big banks, but that's what immediately caused the crisis, exacerbated the crisis that exists right now. Then it's like saying that, you know, just helping the environment alone, you know, would save the world, when in fact, just separating everything out like that is the same mentality of imperialism that destroyed the planet and the human beings that exists right now. So the only answer is in the struggle for African liberation.
Right on.
It has to happen. I mean, not only, you know, because imperialism and white people cannot solve the problems. That is so clear. You know, white people, white world, white power created the problems.
Right.
Africans and people around the world have the material basis for solving the problems, whether it's illness, whether it's AIDS, whether it's famine, whether it's world disease and poverty and farming and all of these issues. Mm-hmm. The people will solve it. They had already solved it for tens of thousands of years, and white people messed it up
and destroyed it. And I think it's important to note that white people and white power created these problems in the process of solving their own problems. You know, in the process of solving their own problems at the expense of the rest of the world, not just the rest of the people in the world, but the world. And I think that's something that may help us to understand why they cannot solve the problems. Because there's always this tendency, for people to solve problems in their own interests. And but the reality is that the majority of the people of the world, their interest lies in overturning a system that is based that is destructive by nature, that is based on parasitism, and not just parasitism in relationship to other people in the world, but parasitism in relationship to the world itself. So I think we have to understand that, to be clear about the fact that it's only the colonized folk who suffer from this relationship, this parasitic relationship, from this parasitic system, who can solve these problems and solve the crisis in general.
Yes, I mean, I think that's really true. And the thing is that right now the imperialist crisis is so deep, and we're really seeing the final years, days, who knows, you know, it could be a matter of days, it could be a matter of decades, but we're seeing the fall of parasitic capitalism, at least in the form that we see it now.
Mm-hmm.
It's imploding. It's like it's sucked the blood of everyone. Now it will affect white people because mm-hmm. it's contracting and it has to suck more blood. And it doesn't know where to get it. It's gonna implode in on itself. So it has to be really clear that white people who want to be part of a future, who want to see a future, have to stand in solidarity with the struggle for African liberation and the liberation of the people on the planet Earth, because that is what is going to be a society that's based on human needs. The interest of African workers and colonized workers is to see a society that works, that benefits all people. And if white people want to be part of this new world, which I feel that we're seeing the falling away of the old, the dying away, the moribund capitalism, and the rising up of the beginnings of the new society, the revolutionary struggle, then we have to stand in solidarity with African people and people on planet Earth. That's where our future lies too. So, you know, white people got to wake up and look at the reality.
Yeah, we're talking about the world food crisis with our guest, Comrade Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee. We're going to take a brief break here and come back with more on Africa Live on AhuaRadio.com.
Sebe o milo malo If you want cook soup, now what are you going to use? Tori bangbo na o mi le ro re o. If your head is hot, now what are you cool on? Tomo bandagba o mi lo ma lo. If your child is crook, now what are him going to use? If water kill your child, now what are you going to use?
Back to Africa Live on ahuraradio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we've been talking about the world food crisis, and we have in the studio with us today Comrade Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee. Ahura, Penny.
Ahura.
So we were talking about the world food crisis, and there's, of course, the article that that is on AhuraNews.com entitled The World Food Crisis and Starvation Made in America. And in that, you talk about the U.S. not being immune from this crisis.
Right.
Can you go into, can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, yes. As we know, there are colonies inside the U.S. as mm-hmm. well. And anytime there's a contraction of the U.S. economy, then, of course, the African community, Mexican and indigenous people will experience that very deeply. And we are already seeing that. I mean, we're seeing right now, today, 28 million people in the U.S. are using food stamps, which is the highest it's ever been, including times of crisis like Katrina and other times when the numbers spiked. It's extremely high. People are saying all over the country that food pantries and that kind of thing are out of food. They're just running out of food. There's such a huge demand for food and, of course, housing, that it's a really desperate situation. And we can see the U.S. has lost hundreds of thousands of jobs just this year alone, probably, 300,000-400,000 jobs. I think 300,000 factory jobs have closed down this year or in the last year. And we have a situation like in Cleveland, Ohio, where 77,000 houses are up for foreclosure, and the majority of those are African. And just think about that. That is one city. Mm. So if you're talking about even just a family of four, which is a small family, and probably underestimating, that's affecting at least 300,000 people right there. Who, and a lot of the people were African middle class, or so they thought, you know. They had jobs, they had the house, and then they lost the house and probably lost job and everything else because the economy, it's all connected. Construction is down, service industry is down, every kind of job. You know, there's nothing out there at all. You have Detroit, Atlanta, Baltimore, places, Stockton, California, largely African or in the West Coast African and Mexican towns, where the foreclosures are just off the charts. And nobody's talking about it. I mean, to try to find some of this out, I found it out by looking at the British papers, covered it much more than any any national U.S. papers, they are really covering over this fact.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that the African community is feeling this. I was reading the statistic that something like 35, maybe 40% of the people on food stamp are Africans, which is a very, very high percentage, mm-hmm. considering that African people are 12% of the U.S., supposedly 12% of the U.S. population. And that the article was saying that the average income of a family of four, of an African family of four on food stamps is something like $9,000 a year, which is desperate starvation. So they have, what they say is something like 27% of the African population, just about a third of the African population in the United States, suffers what they call food insecurity, quote unquote. Do not have the money for enough nutrition for the children, do not know necessarily where the next meal is coming from. That's one third of the African population, and it's something like that with the indigenous population in this country as well. So this condition, this is here. This is inside the U.S. This isn't something that is in Afghanistan or Sierra Leone or, you know, Haiti. This is right here. The condition's right here. And it's getting no coverage, no kind of, you know, people looking at that, no Bush calling for food subsidies for, you know, the African community of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we see that the U.S. is building more prisons because they're counting on the fact. And there's a prison bubble too, by the way, because they float bonds to finance prisons, which Wall Street does this, which is like a mortgage on a prison, and then they do the same thing as with the subprime, they invest that in their hedge funds.
Mm-hmm.
But in times of economic downturn, they consider that prisons are going to increase. So therefore, they have more and more of a bubble on prisons, and we see more and more African people going to prison every year.
Mm-hmm. I think it says 1 in 9 African people, African men of childbearing age are now locked up in U.S. prisons. And you know, even, I mean, you can see the crisis impacting the African community. Where, you know, like now you see a lot of homes, you know, whereas before you'd have a family in a home, you have a lot more now, two families in a home, or more, you know, and, it's just, the situation is getting extremely dire, for African people and other colonized peoples, within U.S. borders, which is, you know, which is interesting because you see in contrast immediately you can see the contrast in terms of the wealth of the white community and the just terrible poverty of the African community side by side. So you excuse me, one of the other things that we're seeing in the U.S. is like they're beginning to ration things like rice and stuff like that.
Yes, I know Costco and Sam's Club have rationed rice, and again, from what I understand, it's not as much from shortages as from hoarding by the agribusiness and the food corporations themselves, based on the speculation that they can make more in another couple months. Prices are going to keep going up,
mm-hmm.
you know. But of course, as we see, there's a lot of factors at work, a lot of fronts of imperialism at work. And it's true that ethanol has made a lot less farmland available for actual food.
Mm-hmm.
So there could well be shortages. It's hard to find out the exact truth, but I'm sure that imperialism is hoarding, but I know that, you know, I'm sure there are some shortages as well.
Yeah. I want to play a couple clips. One from the UN's the head of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, as well as a man named Rick Cosina, who's the head of the UN's food program. I want to play those clips real quick so we can get an idea of what the UN is saying about the food situation, the world food situation, and discuss that just a bit. So this is first is Ban Ki-moon, the head of the UN, and then Rick Cosina, who's the head of the UN's food program.
Without full funding of these emergency requirements, we risk again the specter of widespread hunger, malnutrition, and social unrest on an unprecedented scale.
Well, you know, last year we reckon the prices went up by about 60% up to the beginning of this year. But in the past 3 to 4 months, they've gone up another 75% on top of last year. So, as you say, I mean, it is really biting the people in the urban areas, particularly those who are responsible, those who get their income from casual wage. We're trying to evolve things that will extend the support beyond the initial. This appeal that we're implementing here now, it runs up to the middle of the year. We know that the problem won't go away by then. So we're working with the government to try to come up with some schemes that are more sustaining and will afford the assistance to those that are really hurt. Afghanistan doesn't grow enough of their own food for normal consumption. And also they're dependent very heavily on what they can buy in Pakistan. As we know, in the recent months, Pakistan has essentially turned off the spigot on food coming into this country, and that is really biting hard now. Pakistan has been importing globally over the past year. Their main crop is coming in just now. It seems like it might be a fairly good crop. It might release some of the pressure on the neighboring countries like Afghanistan. Our biggest fear right now is that possibly on top of these price pressures, there's some concern that the crop in Afghanistan this year may be a poor one, something like we saw 2 years ago. If you have the accumulation of those two events, that could spell real problems for a majority of the population.
So those were a couple of clips. First one from Ban Ki-moon, who is the head of the UN. He's talking about the UN moving to build a task force to deal with the world food crisis. And then the second one was of Rick Cosina of the UN food program, who was in Afghanistan. He was talking particularly about the situation in Afghanistan,
where there are food rebellions going on right now.
Exactly. What's your take on that, Penny?
Well, two things. One is that there's nothing that the U.S. or the UN can do, because this is not an isolated crisis. This is a systemic problem. This is, like we said, it's been going on for a long time. You can't change it. If it were an earthquake or a tsunami or you know, a hurricane or something, and people couldn't on a temporary basis get food, then maybe you could rush in some things that they didn't do to Africans for Hurricane Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they could do that, and it would solve a temporary problem. But it can't solve the problem, because, like we said, people around the world are making a dollar to less a day. So with the prices going up, just sending food in and temporary kinds of things, or trying to plant more farmland in a situation where, as we already, you know, said, a farmer can't even sell their own crops on the world market, because the U.S. manipulates that as well. So it can't change it. It can't do anything. It's just a thing to make white people feel like, oh, well, they're taking care of the problem. I'll send in my $20 and it'll go to that. But it's not going to change it. The other thing is that he said that Afghanistan is not growing enough food. Well, no, because the U.S. uses Afghanistan as a drug colony.
Exactly.
And Afghanistan grows 93% of the world's opium crop.
Mm-hmm.
So poppies. So, of course, it can't grow food. Mm-hmm. That's, and the U.S. has determined that.
And I think it's important to note that wasn't the case under the Taliban.
No, it wasn't.
It was once the UN, the US came in and invaded yes. Afghanistan. That
yeah.
It created that situation where most of the poppy, the opium, comes from Afghanistan.
That's right. So there's the problem right there. And to not even mention that is ridiculous, because that's very much controlled by the United States
mm-hmm.
and Western imperialism.
Yeah, I think that you know, first of all, I think it's an offensive kind of thing to see, you know, a situation where the UN wants to come in and save the poor colonized folks, when the reality is that the US, which controls the UN, is the one who creates the problems in the first place. So while you're taking everything that belongs to us. Then you send in some rescue workers to bring back a pittance of what you've stolen from us. I think it's such an offensive kind of thing, and I think that the only reason why that's able to happen is because people don't have a correct summation of what is going on in the world, of who the U.S. is in relationship to the rest of us, and who the U.N. is in relationship to the U.S.
Right.
Because you look at the history of the UN, you look at the role that it's played and is playing, like in places like in Haiti right now,
yes.
Where the UN is shooting down African people
yes.
there who are protesting in response to the food crisis, and before that, shooting down Africans who are protesting in response to the overthrow of the democratically elected government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide.
Yes.
And then the role the UN has played in places like Congo, where it played a role in destroying the government of Patrice Lumumba, the role that the UN has played in all these different places around the world, functioning as just another tool of imperialism. I think it's the reason why we can see anybody saying, okay, UN, please come in and help us, is because they don't recognize a relationship between the UN and the US, or don't see a means for ourselves to have control of our own lives and to solve our own problems.
That's right.
Penny, so the that you know there's these food rebellions that are going on all around the world. Can you talk about just some of the places where the food rebellions are happening? I've noticed that there's the stuff in Haiti, there's the stuff in Afghanistan. What are some of the other places where?
Well, Mexico, El Salvador, they have not been able to get the corn for tortillas, which is basic staple of the diet, is just off the charts. Thailand, Egypt, Liberia, of course, Guinea-Conakry, that's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
For a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And Liberia, of course, you know, the contradictions in Zimbabwe are completely manipulated by Wall Street, and its economy was forced into the kind of hyperinflation, they call it, that they have right now, where, you know, a loaf of bread costs 600,000, whatever the unit is, you know,
yeah.
kind of thing. And that's a neo-colonial situation. There, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, and even parts of the former Soviet Union, like Uzbekistan and places like that. And most places that are heavily dependent on rice, in particular, rice and corn.
It's a serious situation all around the world. I think the question that people ask a lot of times is, how can we stop it? You know, I like to answer that for Africans and other colonized peoples, and I like for you to answer it for mm-hmm. white people. I want to say, as Africans, the only solution for us the only way we're going to solve the food crisis, the subprime crisis, and every other crisis that that imperialism creates is to go to the source of the problem. And the source of the problem is the parasitic relationship that we're held in by a system that was born out of the attack on Africa and the attack on America, the Americas, and the rest of the world. The only way that we're going to solve these crises, these immediate crises that we see right in front of us, is to solve the overall crisis for our people, and that is this relationship, this parasitic relationship with U.S. and European imperialism. The only way we're going to solve this thing is by building the African Socialist International, building an international capacity of African workers in alliance with the poor peasants that moves in unison. Not as, you know, not as Zimbabweans and Nigerians and Trinidadians and whatnot, but as African people in unison, and a worldwide organization that moves to overturn the parasitic relationship that the U.S. and Europe hold Africa and African people everywhere around the world, even if we are living in the U.S. or Europe, we're held in this parasitic relationship. So we have to build the African Socialist International, build a organized revolutionary capacity, become a part of that process. Then we can see, we'll be able to see, just like we talked about being able to see justice once we have power in our own hands. But that's the only way you're going to be able to see food, housing, and any other problem that we face as African people. The only way we're going to be able to solve it is by getting organized, by building an international African revolutionary organization. You can join in that process, because it's a process that's been ongoing since the early 1980s. It's a process that's been ongoing to build the African Socialist International, and you have Africans who are tied into this process all around the world. Africans in places like Sierra Leone and Guinea-Conakry, or South Africa, or Swaziland, and Guyana in South America, and the U.S. and Europe. You know, you have Africans all around the world who are tied into this process, and that's where you need to be as an African who's listening, who wants to solve this problem for our people. Join the African Socialist International, the process to build the ASI. And you can find out more about the ASI. You can email us here at Uhuru Radio, at dj@uhururadio.com, or you can go to the website of the ASI, it's asiuhuru.org, and find out more about the ASI and the process to build the ASI and solve our collective problem. Because in the final analysis, all of our individual problems are a result of our collective problem, and that's the parasitic relationship with U.S. and European imperialism. So that's the way colonized folks can solve the problem. Mm-hmm. Africans can solve the problem. And other colonized folks, you can solve the problem by building your own organized capacity, building a revolutionary organization to overturn a relationship, because that's the only way. You can't, we won't be able to have a future, won't be able to have food or any other type of guarantee of any other type of things that we need outside of overturning the relationship with this parasitic system that's going to keep sucking us dry until we're dead. So that's the answer for colonized peoples. Penny, what is the answer for North Americans or Europeans who want to solve the problem?
Well, I mean, it's the same answer, except that we've got to be under the leadership. We've got to stand in solidarity with this movement for African people and the people around the world to liberate their resources. Why should the wealthy, wealthy continent of Africa, why should people be starving? This is where the diamonds are. This is where the oil is, the bauxite, every mineral, every resource that the world needs to function is there. It's been the basis of the world food, I guess they call it the world food basket, for 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. There should not be famine. There shouldn't be any of it. There's no reason for that. And that's becoming more and more clear to people around the world when they can see the standard of life in the United States, and they would be like, well, why should our children die so that white children can live? And more people around the world are coming to that conclusion. I think for white people, we have to really wake up and look at the reality. There's no good news for imperialism. Imperialism is on its deathbed. There was a time when imperialism could say, in 5 years, we're going to have new roads, we're going to have a bigger economy, more factories, more this, more that, more better education, better housing, all this kind of thing. We're going to solve our problems. There's nothing. Look at what subject could you look at that's not in crisis? Every single thing, every single front of U.S. society is in a tremendous crisis today, whether it's healthcare, whether it's education, whether it's economic, whether it's political, whether it's the alienation of white society. This is a horrible way to live, knowing that we live at the expense of everybody else on the planet. And I think that if we want to see a future, if we want to see this planet survive and human beings be able to live in peace and interact in a fantastic way with each other, then we have to get rid of this blood-sucking, vicious system that is built on enslavement, starvation, torture, suffering, and all that, so that we could live our lives. And that, is, you know, it's just, it comes back on us. And we have to reject that. We have to be organized. It's not just good enough to think about it. It's not just good enough to say, hey, these are good ideas I can talk about the next time I'm in Starbucks with my friends. Mm-hmm. We have to be organized. We've got to do the work. We have to have a real relationship, organizational relationship, under the leadership of African people working for the African Revolution, the African working class. So that's the stand. Join the African People's Solidarity Committee, Uhuru Solidarity Movement. Go to APSCUhuru.org and find out more about APSC and being part of the future for all of humanity.
Right on. And that concludes today's program of Africa Live, Issues Behind the Headlines on uhururadio.com. But I want to let you know that you need to stick around because the next show is Uhuru on the Move, where they'll be interviewing Joseph Guzman, who was in the car and the victim of the police assault that murdered Sean Bell with 50 shots. So stay tuned and listen to that great interview that's going to be happening. Uhuru.
How good and how pleasant it would be before God and man. Proving to how I'm